I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I believe those are some of the most constructive and productive discussions we've had. I've been meeting with President Xi since both of us were vice president over 10 years ago. Our meetings have always been candid and straightforward. We haven't always agreed, but they've been straightforward. And today, build on the groundwork we laid over the past several months of high-level diplomacy between our teams, we've made some important progress, I believe.
That is President Biden yesterday after his meeting with Premier Xi in San Francisco, saying, I think we have accomplished a great deal. Well, they did establish the, quote, hotline so they can call each other directly in the event of something else happening, such as, oh, I don't know, a balloon flying over the U.S. that is obviously from China, that Biden could pick up the phone and say, what's that thing in the sky? Well, what do you see? I'm not totally dismissing the idea of the communication direct line between the president and China. We've had it previously with Russia, the red phone in the John F. Kennedy office, Oval Office, and with Gorbachev at the time. Khrushchev, I should say. So that kind of connection is good. You don't have to go through several layers of people to reach out and find through various emissaries what is happening. So I'm not going to say it's not a good idea, but the point is, did it really accomplish everything? And what was the actual intent other than just a photo op? Was that part of it? Was that part of what Biden wanted to be seen and photographed with the leader of the Chinese communists and put it in some kind of campaign spot? I have met the enemy and I know him and I know I'm in charge. I don't know. They may try to do that. If so, I don't think that's going to work very well. I do know how the Chinese are playing it, and that is it was nothing accomplished of any value. But anything that might have been accomplished and considered of value, Biden ended up shooting down. I'll get to that in just a moment. Once again, thanks for joining us. Here we are, November 17, 2023. This is the second hour of Larry Connors USA. We're here every Monday through Friday night for you, 6 to 8 p.m. And, of course, reminding you that when we're on the air, we are streaming video at News Talk STL Facebook and Twitter, or Larry Connors USA Facebook and Twitter, or on Rumble, numerous platforms you can find us. If you miss anything, if you miss either part of either hour, the video you want to see, or the audio, and you want to share with someone, you simply go to LarryConnorsUSA.com, LarryConnorsUSA.com, and you'll find everything available. Quentin gets them up almost as soon as they're, well, actually, as it goes on the air at 6 o'clock, it's going to be available. So, I mentioned that Biden walked away thinking that he had accomplished a lot. I'm not sure a lot of folks are going to agree that anything was accomplished. Oh, the other thing was the fentanyl. That's right. He also said we got them to promise that they would stop or do their best to start controlling fentanyl coming in. That's if you believe the Chinese communists will actually do that. With all the deaths we've had in this nation, that would be great. But, of course, another part of that, let me add to this, you can blame China for the fentanyl because they are responsible. But the other part of that equation is an open border that made it so easily to get more fentanyl into this nation. But Biden was convinced that, well, the premier said he'll do what he can to stop it from coming in. It's a trust to verify and verify. Main thing is, pardon me, I don't think that you're going to see the Chinese premier absolutely honor what he just said. And there's already a lot of fentanyl in Mexico now that they could bring on up. But here's what Biden did do that angered the Chinese. Right after Biden has finished shaking hands and greeting and sipping tea, whatever else they did, and they get all this kind of arranged of what they're going to do, he ends up making a remark that ticked off the premier.
Joe Biden has rubbed China up the wrong way after calling Xi Jinping a dictator. The comments came after a four-hour meeting between the two leaders at the APEC summit in San Fran. It's the second time the US president has made such a comment in as many months. Beijing says the comments are wrong and political manipulation.
This kind of statement is extremely incorrect and irresponsible political manipulation, which China resolutely opposes. It needs to be pointed out that there are always some ill-intentioned individuals attempting to sow discord and damage Sino-US relations, but their attempts will not succeed.
Yeah, and the comments didn't go down too well with the US Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, who can be seen here, there it goes, wincing as his boss made those comments.
Yeah, the video does show Blinken sitting in the seat row. As soon as he hears President Biden call Xi a dictator, he kind of, and what was going on inside his head? Explosions. And thinking, oh my God, you didn't do it again. You stepped on a landmine. We had it all set out for you, and you throw the word dictator in. Oh, there it goes. So immediately, Premier Xi was upset. But the attitude for the Chinese government is there's always someone trying to throw something in to stop our relationships. That would have been Biden in that case, if that's what they're trying to say. Now, the other thing that I'm seeing here that got announced today, the China National Narcotics Control Commission. I didn't know they had such a thing, did you? The China National Narcotics Control Commission announcing the Biden administration has lifted sanctions against the Institute of Forensic Science at China's Ministry of Public Security. That apparently was a concession that Biden gave Xi, saying we will do nothing more to halt production of fentanyl is what it amounts to. She promised to break and crack down on fentanyl. Now we have just, with this administration and the announcement from the China National Narcotics Control Commission, we're taking any sanctions off of them regarding fentanyl. I'm reading a little bit more. I mean, this story, it even adds to the U.S., the China statement actually was added to the U.S. Commerce Department list of sanctioned entities in 2020 for engaging in various contrary activities contrary to the foreign policy of the U.S. That would again be fentanyl, but now they're taking away those sanctions. Well, Gordon G. Chain had said yesterday, another China expert said, I think Xi is going to basically roll Biden, and he did, it appears by that. Now, NBC had a China expert on, Victor Cha, for his opinion.
It was a success in the sense that the purpose was to reestablish communications. The two leaders had not spoken in a year. And moreover, next year, there's very little chance that they'll be able to meet again because there are elections in Taiwan in January, our elections in November. Xi Jinping is not going to come to the United States 2 years in a row, and President Biden won't have the time to go to Asia. So it was important for them to meet. Reestablish contact. It's still a very competitive relationship, but at least there's dialogue to ensure that this competition doesn't escalate into a conflict. So in that sense, you know, it's important, but modest progress.
Modest progress, and I would say, based on what I just told you, several steps backwards. There was a question to pose to Victor Cha. Do you think that these talks would have eased any tensions involving Taiwan?
I think it did. I think the Chinese wanted a more forward-leaning statement from President Biden about opposing the independence of Taiwan. In fact, in their readout of the meeting, they referred to language that President Biden used in Bali a year ago rather than the language he used, you know, in the meeting at APEC in San Francisco. The United States is very clear on this. It doesn't support any sort of unilateral change to the status quo in the Taiwan Strait. So President Biden certainly didn't give any ground in terms of the U.S. support for Taiwan, but and also certainly didn't give any license to Xi Jinping to think that he could exert any sort of influence or use of force or economic coercion on Taiwan.
So that might be true. But again, as I'm reading, as coming from the China Communist Party, their Institute of Forensic Security Advances and their drug controls has just been delisted by our State Department as adding to a threat to our country. And Blinken and Biden had said one of our top priorities is to stop drugs being trafficked out of China used to produce fentanyl. All right. So you got the premier to say we will stop it. And just on his words, we decide, in fact, let me read it exactly as it's presented in the Hill, that one State Department spokesman said when questioned about why you're no longer going to involve the Forensic Institute involving these drugs, saying, well, you know, it appears that he said that they're not going to do it, so we're going to take them at their word. That's kind of what he's trying to say. The other issue is the Uyghur Muslims. And they say, we don't think the Institute of Forensic Science in China is involved with any human rights violations against Uyghur Muslims, so we're going to let that slide too. In other words, the bottom line is, Xi came to the U.S. and Biden gave him anything he wanted, or almost. What did we get? What did we get? We got maybe a phone line in the White House. We got maybe a promise from the Chinese communist leader. That's what we got. Coming up, the latest on Israel and Hamas, but first, what you might call an ambush question for President Biden.
Israel's war in Gaza has killed more than 11,000 Palestinians in just over a month and created a humanitarian disaster. Israeli officials have said this war could take months or even years. Have you communicated to Prime Minister Netanyahu any sort of deadline or time frame for how long you are willing to support Israel in this operation? Are you comfortable with the operation going on indefinitely? And is there any deal underway to free hostages? Thank you.
Yes, no, working backwards, forward. Look, I have been deeply involved in moving on the hostage negotiation. I don't want to get ahead of myself here because I don't know what's happened in the last 4 hours, but I have... We've gotten great cooperation from the Qataris. I've spoken with them as well a number of times. I think the pause and that is really that Israelis have agreed to is down to, well, I'm getting too much detail. I know, Mr. Secretary, I'm going to stop. But I am mildly hopeful. I'm mildly hopeful.
He was looking at Secretary of State Blinken. Can I say this? Can I not? I mean, kind of trying to look, do I continue or what? And apparently Blinken was closing his eyes, rolling back. I have no idea what he was doing. But Biden got the message, don't go down that road any deeper. Now, the pause he talked about Israel agreed to was to, for a humanitarian aid to be delivered to northern Gaza. But we still don't know that it's actually getting to the civilian population, that Hamas isn't taking it. And it is giving a chance for some of those in the northern portion of Gaza to head south and get out of harm's way if they're not shot in the back by Hamas as they leave. I'm looking at a report that reporters in Israel were just doing a visit at one of the towns along the Gaza border. And halfway through their visit and interview, a siren began blaring, red alert, indicating incoming Hamas rockets. So they're firing the rockets into Israel, whether there's a pause in fighting for humanitarian aid or not. Reporters are saying they all covered their heads, ducked for cover. Then they could hear the boom of the Iron Dome missile defense knocking down the Hamas rockets before they could do direct harm. So much for a pause, a ceasefire, as some want. Now, I said that was kind of an ambush question for Biden because the reporter made it very clear. Rockets continue to fall. Israel continues to fire rockets onto Palestine, killing thousands of them. You get her agenda, her slant? Of course you do. Well, after a little winks or nod from Secretary of State Blinken, Biden did try to continue answering.
I guess the best way for me to say it is that I take a look. The IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, acknowledges they have an obligation to use as much caution as they can in going after their targets. It's not like they're rushing in the hospital, knocking down doors and, you know, pulling people aside and shooting people indiscriminately. But Hamas, as I said they plan on attacking Israelis again. And this is a terrible dilemma.
What he was describing, knocking on doors and shooting people at the answer to the door, that is what Hamas was doing. In fact, they didn't really knock on the door. They just broke in and started slaughtering civilians, babies, women, elderly men who had no weapons. And when police of the kibbutzes tried to gather together and all they had were pistols, they were outgunned, outmanned, and they were about 50-plus slaughtered by Hamas. And, of course, they were busy taking hostages, including some Israeli soldiers they found. And the body of one of them, 19 years of age, found just outside one of the hospitals in Gaza yesterday. But Biden wanted to make it very clear, if you're talking about, does Israel really know my position? Now, this is before he allows questions to start. So in this case, he's speaking very forcefully.
Look, I made it clear to the Israelis that to Bibi and to his war cabinet, that I think the only ultimate answer here is a two-state solution that's real. We got to get to the point where there is an ability to be able to even talk without worrying about whether or not we're just dealing with, they're dealing with Hamas that's going to engage in the same activities they did over the past, on the 7th. So but I can't tell, I'm not a fortune teller, I can't tell you how long it's going to last. But I can tell you I don't think it ultimately ends until there's a two-state solution. I made it clear to the Israelis I think it's a big mistake for them to think they're going to occupy Gaza and maintain Gaza. I don't think that works.
I don't think it works for them not to have security, Israeli security in Gaza going forward. And that's what they said they're going to have. And if they're being fired on while reporters are talking to people in Israel, you can see where this is headed. Coming up, more revelations about COVID and more proof that, yeah, you were right all along. Not the government. You.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
You guys are awesome. I love you. And it really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local angle.
Oh, people, this is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local, really good.
News Talk STL at 101.9/94.1
and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you, why pay more than four? In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets' ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner of Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
I have a great whiskey suggestion. Stolach Whiskey, created using natural limestone filtered water from the Ozark Highlands, aged in Missouri oak. Next time, get a bottle. But if you're going to share with friends, you better get at least two bottles. Stolach has the Larry Connors seal of approval. See the full story at Stolach.com. Stolach, Stolloch, from Stone Ledge Distillery.
You're out down. Take you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
17 signed a paper that called it conspiracy theory. The idea that the virus could have originated in the lab. Do you think words like conspiracy theory should be in a scientific paper?
Senator, I never used that word when I was referring to it. You're distorting virtually everything.
Did you communicate with the five scientists who wrote the opinion piece in Nature where they were describing, oh, there's no way this could have come from the lab?
That was not me.
That was not me. So says Dr. Fauci, Dr. Fake. That was one of the hearings back in December 2022 when Kentucky Senator Rand Paul is trying to get some direct answers out of Dr. Fauci. Good luck with that. We never got any clear and direct answers out of him. And, of course, now he's out of government. But he made a lot of money while he was in, not only from his payroll from the government, but who knows what kind of deals he was doing on the side with various pharmaceuticals. Do I know for a fact he did? I don't. But at the same time, when we look at what we've been told repeatedly by Fauci, you have to have questions. So whether or not Dr. Fauci was part of using the word conspiracy or part of getting these guys together to sign off and deny that COVID came from the lab, the bottom line is now we know it did. And there's more evidence it's surfacing. In fact, I want you to hear from Dr. Rand Paul on how he evaluates Fauci's decision in the process of while we were seeing COVID develop, and then it's out, and then it continues to sweep across the world and damage the world economy, much less kill hundreds of thousands. And Rand Paul can even find that he could dismiss some of Fauci's blame, except for one part.
In 2012, Anthony Fauci responds and says, sure, a scientist could get bitten, a pandemic could start, but the knowledge will be worth the risk. That is a judgment error, and that doesn't make him evil. I think it's a terrible, terrible judgment, one of the worst mistakes in modern medical history or public health, that he allowed this research to go on in a totalitarian government under less significant safety protocols than we have in our country, and that he allowed it to bypass the safety committee that should have reviewed it. All that's terrible judgment doesn't make him evil. When you look at the cover-up, though, I'm a little bit less forgiving, because from early January, he knew that he had funded Wuhan. The first email exchanges he has with his assistants are them showing him the papers that had been funded by him and approved by his agency, and them getting to know, oh my goodness, this is a big deal. In private, all of the virologists say it came from the lab. Within 3 days of that meeting, February 4th, he's commissioned and directed them to do a paper called Proximal Origins that gets published in Nature. In that, they say that the virus is absolutely, unquestionably not from a lab. He then quotes this from the White House. This is evidence that he is covering his tracks, and I don't think that that's noble or can be condoned, because he's trying to escape culpability for the millions of people who died from this virus, and it was because of his bad judgment.
But were
his
original intentions
bad? His original intentions may have been pure, but the cover-up is something that is wrong and cannot be condoned.
Cannot be condoned. Cannot be condoned. He needs to be held accountable. I want you to hear a piece presented on the Hill public, the Hill TV report. Hill, the Hill is a column written basically based upon what happens on Capitol Hill, leans left. But I want you to hear this report on the Hill TV report.
A new investigation has found that a Montana lab under the leadership of former NIAID director Dr. Anthony Fauci experimented with a coronavirus strain shipped from, you guessed it, Wuhan, China, a year before the COVID pandemic officially began. The National Institutes of Health, under Fauci's leadership, allegedly infected 12 Egyptian fruit bats with a SARS-like virus called WIV-1 at the Montana lab in 2018. This has not been independently verified yet, so please do take this report with a grain of salt.
According to the Daily, the virus strain was allegedly shipped from the Wuhan lab that the FBI believes to have caused the COVID-19 pandemic and was tested on bats acquired from a, quote, roadside zoo in Maryland. The 2018 experiment was executed at the NIH's Rocky Mountain Laboratories in Montana, a lab overseen by Fauci.
In other words, Fauci had involvement way back then. A top deputy has been uncovered, according to an email in the hands of Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, and he included the email in a letter to the Health Secretary Becerra, pointing out that a top deputy to Dr. Fauci, indicating in this email that he purposely did not keep records that he knew would be sought by the public and congressional investigators. The deputy, identified as Dr. David Morenz, said, in quotes, in a June 27, 2021 email, I have retained very few emails or documents on these matters, and I continue to request that correspondence on sensitive issues be sent to me at my Gmail address, talking about his personal. So Senator Johnson sending this on to Health Secretary Becerra, saying that Dr. Morenz wrote to colleagues after senators, including Johnson, were then trying to get more documents. Basically, they were in the process of trying to cover it up. Well, there's another guy that had been looking into this, too. This is Justin Kinney. He's with the Cold Spring Harbor Lab. That is a private, not-for-profit institute with research programs in cancer and other items involving things like COVID. And he had his own view on some of these early COVID emails.
The emails showed that the scientists first got together as whistleblowers. They got together because they really thought that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, might have leaked from a research lab in Wuhan, China. They were particularly concerned that the genome of the virus had showed signs of genetic engineering. So, for example, on February 1st, Christian Anderson, one of the authors, wrote that the lab escape version of this is so friggin' likely to have happened because they were already doing this type of work. And the molecular data is fully consistent with that scenario.
In other words, it obviously came out of the lab, and they recognize that. And again, that's a Justin Kinney with the Cold Spring Harbor Lab. And then he explains, as they came together as whistleblowers originally, then what did happen?
So these scientists expressed these concerns to the heads of their funding agencies, including Anthony Fauci, as well as Francis Collins, the head of the U.S. National Institutes of Health, and Jeremy Farrar, the head of the Wellcome Trust. But after a teleconference that the scientists had with these funding agencies' heads, as well as with other scientists, the authors wrote a paper, The Proximal Origins of SARS-CoV-2, that unambiguously ruled out a laboratory origin for SARS-CoV-2. So, for example, the paper states, our analyses clearly show that SARS-CoV-2 is not a laboratory construct or a purposefully manipulated virus. And, quote, we do not believe that any type of laboratory-based scenario is plausible. Now, because of the released emails and Slack messages, it is clear that the authors did not believe these central conclusions of their paper.
In other words, they were lying to the public, and they knew it. They knew it anyway, but they were going to continue to parrot the line. It did not come out of Wuhan lab because U.S. dollars and Dr. Fauci were tied to that. When Dr. Fauci said, it's worth knowing what kind of things can be done to weaponize a flu or a virus, I'm with him on that to the extent to know if the enemy uses it against us, we're prepared. But you do not let that be carried out by one of your adversaries and that they're doing the lab work, which you're never allowed to go inside and inspect and see what they're doing. But Fauci apparently had no problems with doing that. And these other scientists, when they claim stick with the science, believe the science, Jason Kinney, again, a Cold Spring Harbor lab, says, I think it came down to dollars over public health.
What I was very dismayed to see is the process by which their interactions with the heads of their funding agencies, with scientists who have made their living and become famous off of genetically engineering viruses to make them more dangerous to humans, and through their interactions with the editors at Nature and Nature Medicine, they evolved gradually from the opinion that SARS-CoV-2 was very likely to have come from a lab to writing a paper in which they say that there's no chance that that happened. This virus absolutely came from nature. But even with that evolution in thinking, it is still clear that at the time that they wrote the paper and at the time of publication and afterwards, they did not fully believe their conclusions. They still harbored doubts, but they did not publicly express those doubts. And those doubts would have had, if expressed, could have had a major impact in the response of governments to the COVID-19 pandemic.
If they'd just been frank and honest, but they didn't want to. So Senator Johnson says we need more investigation of these emails that got covered up, destroyed, or sent elsewhere. A director of the watchdog, pardon me, called Protect the Public Trust, told Epoch Times, all of this shows a pretty brazen effort to avoid public record requirements. In other words, keep the lie alive, peddle the lie. Coming up, hate group for the Israeli rally.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I'm always glad to have new sponsors, but I have turned some down. See, I only endorse clients if I believe in them. And I've been a spokesman for John Beal for 10 years. Through those years, listeners said they went with John Beal because they trusted me. And just recently, a woman named Mary wrote, "We got a John Beal roof based on your recommendation." Thank you, Mary, and all the others for calling John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Ackerman Toyota has the 2024 models. You're going to be impressed. Check them out in person at Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. In fact, you've got to see the 2024 Toyota Sequoia. Very impressive. This is the time to buy and get top dollar for your vehicle. Looking for pre-owned? Ackerman Toyota can also help you. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perished in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield is so luxurious you might think you have to be a member. You don't, but you will quickly see why Lit won the 2023 Riverfront Times Best Smoking Lounge, Best Smoke Shop for the second time in a row. Quality cigars, premium drinks. So join me at Lit, just off 40 in the district at Chesterfield. For special events, entertainment, always check the website, litstl.com. litstl.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So as I'd mentioned earlier, President Joe Biden, after meeting with Premier Xi, did sign off on the bill that the new House Speaker Mike Johnson got pushed through to keep the government in operation, a CR, continuing resolution, which I'm always against, but in this case, with the war in Israel and everything else going on, will grant a little bit more time. And actually, the way Johnson came up with it, I think, was certainly interesting. And while it was not absolutely endorsed by everyone, it did get through both the House and the Senate. Otherwise, we would be out of money and the entire government supposedly would be shutting down right as we go in the holiday season. What this bill does, it sets two dates for some federal agencies and two dates for others as to when they might shut down. January 9 for some federal agencies, if they cannot come together and negotiate full year appropriations bills by January 9, some federal agencies will stay open. Then February 2nd, they'll try again, and if they're not doing it then some others will be shut down. It's a two-step approach. Johnson vows that he will not support any additional stopgap funding measures, saying we're only doing this to avoid and set a ground for a spending fight with the Senate next year. It does not include the White House $106 billion request for wartime aid for Israel nor Ukraine. Although the House did pass a separate bill to give $14-plus billion to Israel, and even Chuck Schumer, a Jew Democrat, said we need to get money to Israel ASAP, but he did not want to sign off on that bill because it didn't include money for Ukraine. So he's turning his back on his own people of faith. to get what he wants politically. It is as simple as that. And as nasty as that. Now, you know, we had the raid and the mob scene described outside the DNC headquarters the other night. Even one Democrat member who got out of there said, I was more afraid than I was on January 6th. In other words, these folks had gathered at the Democrat National Committee the other day, chanting pro-PLO, pro-Hamas, demanding that the DNC direct all Democrats to follow their lead and decide to get rid of any aid to Israel and try to stop it, put an end to it. That's what they were going to try to do, even to the extent stopping some UN trucks from moving out that might be carrying aid to Israel. And then, of course, we had over the weekend prior to that, we had something like 300,000 in a march for Israel in D.C. No violence, no one threatened, but the leftist state-controlled media has an agenda, and they're not going to miss an opportunity. The Nation publication is one of the oldest weekly magazines in the U.S., but it leans left and sometimes falls on its face on the left. So it's not just leaning, it's basically entrenched in left politics. Here's the way they describe in The Nation, in an essay, the March for Israel that took place peacefully. It's titled, and it's written by The Nation's sports editor. Why the hell would they have the sports editor write about this? Give me a break. Right there, it tells me somebody has no control of what the hell they're doing. Maybe just no one else had the guts to do it. Or somebody else wrote it and said, we're going to put your name on it. Good luck. Anyway, it's titled, The March for Israel Was a Hate Rally. Huh. I haven't heard anyone call out even in any leftist media, obviously, nor even any of the other maybe independent news organizations or even right organizations call the attack on the DNC a hate action, although it was, and I would say it was. I haven't heard the FBI's investigating it as a hate action and rally. They should. But the march last weekend, almost 300,000 strong, attending this rally, supporting Israel. The author of this editorial says, well, first of all, don't say 300,000. Well, actually, the number they had stated, roughly 290,000. I rounded that up to 300,000. My bad. So take 10,000 off. 290,000. And even then he said, no. You're over-describing it. You're inflating it. It's a massive turnout. Should just said massive turnout. Isn't it true that when the left is pushing an agenda, how many they have? Oh, my God, they're everywhere. Where if it's the other side, well, it's just a few people showing up that need to be put away in a sane asylum. But the author of this article for The Nation said this was a political event like nothing I've seen in two decades of covering rallies in this town. You're a sports editor. What have you been covering? Sports rallies? What are you talking about? Maybe you've done other stuff prior to that time. Anyway, he says, this rally had incessant calls to keep bombing Gaza and make the event celebration, or rather celebration, not just of war, but of war crimes. Did he not hear what the PLO rally was doing, not only at the DNC, but across the nation? They were rallying and shouting, death to Israel, death to America in some cases. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Even a congresswoman said that and refused to take it back. when asked, is that not maybe inciting people to violence? I don't recall. In fact, I'll tell you right now, I did not read and follow the nation that closely, but I'm willing to bet you money. I'll bet you money. They didn't write in the nation that her remarks were in any way a piece of hate. Then the writer slams the former Trump U.S. Ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, for his joy over the large showing. And, of course, he points out Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries were there. He said that was right before another round of killing civilians and targeting journalists trying to show us these horrors of the world. He said Democrats sacrificing their party's presidential hopes on the altar of a war crime deserve nothing but contempt. Ooh, this guy, he must be covering, if he's in sports, he's covering cage matches, bare knuckled. He said, if young people don't turn out to vote, remember this rally. Remember how Schumer and Jeffries locked arms with Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, looked at 80% of their voters and spit in their faces. Wow. So it wasn't just that he called the Israeli rally a hate crime and a hate action. He's now called out Jeffries and Schumer for even being there. He thinks he might have stepped over the line for some of those Democrats. He said they also claimed that, and he wrote, that they failed to remark on the racist handmade signs attendees created for the occasion. He said these Democrats, quote, are openly hostile to the generation of youth whose support they need to stay in office. A generation that inconveniently believes Palestinian lives matter. Well, I believe Palestinian lives do matter. Unless they're a terrorist. And then I don't really give a damn, to be direct with you. And he said, and then they are contemptuous of Jews like me. Oh, I see. That's why they picked him. Because he's also Jewish. So he could call the Israeli rally a hate rally. He said they are contemptuous of Jews like me who say to Israel that their genocidal attacks must not be pursued in our name. I honestly do not know any Jews, obviously I don't know this guy, that consider that Israel is carrying out genocide in Palestine, I mean in Gaza. I'm sure there must be some there. But genocide is what you call happened during the Holocaust to wipe out a race based on their religion, putting them in cattle cars, into rooms, and then steaming gas down on them. That was genocide. What is happening in Gaza with Israel? Bombing, trying their best to hit precision targets and avoid collateral damage, that's war. And there was peace prior to October 7th. But again, this writer for the essay he wrote for The Nation said, this was not just a rally supporting a war. This was a rally supporting a war crime. If I had him here in front of me, I'd say, well, tell me how you would explain and what would you call shooting innocent men, women, and children, chopping off the heads of babies? Would that be acceptable or would that be maybe a war crime? I might look up this guy's name and send him a note personal. See how he responds. If I do and he responds, I'll let you know. But if I send it, I'm not sure I'd get anything back. So I probably won't even waste my time with it. I do want to share something else with you about, this is a writer I'd not really seen anything from before, my boots on the ground, Andrew, sent it to me, and I think it's a very good point being raised here. This is apparently a column that's written under the name of Alan B. Coleman, and he has apparently been doing this for some time, and it's a can be seen and read without a pay screen or sometimes adding that, you know, you help keep me going if I can get some money from you. But he has the, it's titled Speaking Wrong at the Right Time. Basically, it's Adam B. Coleman, his attempt at making sense of the world. This one is titled Leftism and the Crisis of Loneliness. He said, if you watch the body language and facial experts of those who are all about woke attitude, you'll see a different story. He said, about a year ago, I started watching Libs on TikTok video. I put it on mute, found that their body language and mannerisms would tell a deeper story than everything they were espousing. And I was troubled by my revelations of these individuals. He said, the Libs at TikTok gather slips of leftist propaganda videos made by individuals. Some are benign, often they're short length. Some are just ridiculous, maybe even funny. But he said, in my column, Speaking Wrong at a Right Time, the Right Time, he said, I wanted to point out I saw a typical pattern that I recognized. Often these folks were alone. They had trouble even making eye contact with the camera. They were under the age of 26, would have a very blank expression on their faces, even if their words were describing their pride or happiness. He said, for many of these people, and again, this is his perception of it, for many of these people as Libs on TikTok, as much as they talk about community, their facial expressions would often allow and show signs of physical isolation, loneliness, fatigue. And over time, you'd end up seeing the same people witnessing the progression as they began to get worse. He said, I've had many moments in my life isolated, struggling with loneliness, so maybe I sense it better than others, but I can empathize with their struggle because of it. While attempting to watch their or match their rhetoric with the body language and facial expressions, it was always a mismatch. The best way to compare it would be if you were someone who is clearly sad, but when asked how you're doing, you say, I'm fine, I'm good. And people know it's a lie. Said, your instinct as a human being says they're lying to you. I get a sense that these young people are lost. They're attempting to have ideology be their compass to finding some camaraderie with others. The words they use are strong, but their face tells me they're not confident. They're not sure what they're saying because it's basically a script. They are social misfits to that extent. And he added, I understand what it's like not to fit in, be misunderstood. One of my good high school friends was, at the age of 16, was dealing with an abusive father at home, over-medicated, eventually got into overdosing and died at age 30. He had the same look of loneliness and desperation like some of these kids. He said they don't think they fit in society, so they're trying to make themselves fit, and that's not working either. Again, his column is titled Speaking Wrong at the Right Time, Adam B. Coleman. If you know someone facing a situation that might be suicidal, help them get professional help. Contact the suicide hotline. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.